So I just want to re-articulate what I thought was a great summation of was Akbar's comment that if we think this is about design density versus accidental density, we should think again. Because I'd like to ask you, where is this picture taken? This is not Hong Kong. The title of my lecture is After Hong Kong. And after Hong Kong is Bangkok. So that high-rise density that you saw is part of a planned new central business district that was modeled after the central waterfront in Hong Kong. So in addition to the broadening geography of the discussion, I would also like to question the use of the word sustainable to describe urbanism in the 21st century. In the context of rapid urbanization, rapid climate change, and now economic tsunami, I think sustainability is probably the last thing we're able to achieve. So Bangkok after Hong Kong, vertical density, sustainable solutions. Between 1985 and 1995, Thailand was the world's fastest growing economy. This decade coincided with a period of great nervousness about the transfer of Hong Kong back to China. The joint agreement was signed in December of 1984. But by early 1997, Thailand's rapid economic boom centered in Bangkok was overheating. And here we see new CBD that was under construction at the time, as it existed when I arrived in Bangkok as a Fulbright scholar in 1998. In July 1997, the real estate bubble had burst, the Thai government was forced to devalue its currency, and the Asian financial crisis began. 300 high-rise construction projects in central Bangkok were halted, and three ambitious mass transit projects were threatened. This is where what that CBD looks like today. Hopewell. Of the three mass transit projects, it's interesting to look at Hopewell. The Hopewell project was an agreement signed with the Ministry of Transportation, the State Railway of Thailand, and Hopewell Company Limited, and owned by Sir Gordon Wu, on November 9th, 1990. Hopewell put up $3.2 billion to back up the project, about 10% down payment, for the right to develop real estate along the SRT line. In other words, the State Railway of Thailand was taking on the Transit Plus model from Hong Kong. The government decided to terminate the project in 1998 when it was clear that Hopewell was not able to continue with the project. Secure the loans to finish it. Even though several groups attempted to revive it, controversy still haunt the project, earning it the name Hopeless. If you follow the Stonehenge-like ruins of the Hopewell project, you'll end up in Muang Thong Thani, a new town for 700,000 people. That's the size of Boston. And we saw yesterday that there are six new towns of this size built in Hong Kong. Muang Thong Thani, if we end this flyby on the expressway, is a ghost town when I visited in 1998. I just want to point out on the right are the high-rise factory buildings, again, very familiar to Hong Kong, and then the residential towers on the left. But this is not a hopeless lecture, because in the 10 years that I've been visiting and teaching in Thailand since 1998, I've witnessed a resilient urban design model, not based on the Hong Kong model, but based on something more indigenous. So we're going to look at Bangkok, vertical density, public space, and resilient urban design models. I've always been interested in urban change and how urban actors initiate, participate, and adapt to those changes. This project, Transparent Cities, looked at an archaeology of capitalism in New York City. Here we have the timeline of office building construction in New York City, turned on its left to make it vertical. So 1890s on the bottom, 1990 when I did this drawing is on the top. And what you can see are three booms and three busts. We've had another boom and bust since then, but the three booms are, of course, the first expansion of the stock market in the 1920s, the bust that followed the Great Depression of World War II. The next the rise of corporate America after World War II, the bust of the oil shock of the 1970s. Electronic trading comes in 1978, New York Stock Exchange, and we had the bonfire of the vanities of the 1980s, and the over-speculation which resulted in the bust of 1987, the stock market bust and financial crisis. So those of you, the students in the audience, are a little bit worried about the current downturn, don't worry. They're more frequent, but they're also more, the economy is more resilient, as according to this graph. So this drawing led to a project that was hosted by the Skyscraper Museum called Manhattan Time Formations. And so in this website, you can navigate through this space of economic booms and busts and the geography of Manhattan. So the timeline not only looks at the cultural properties of these different eras from book titles on the left, from the different periods, but also government involvement in changing zoning in relationship during these lulls. And so what I found is like new technologies such as thermal space that came in after World War II, or the digital workplace, which happened in the interval following the oil shock, happens during these lulls. So these lulls are moments of innovation. So when I came to Bangkok, what I wrote about is that I was going to look at the central business district of Bangkok, how that evolved over time. So I came there, as I said, in 1998. And my first interview with a real estate agent was like, what's wrong with Bangkok? There is no central business district. And so I turned to shopping. And so what I looked at, and this follows the exact same timeline we just saw, is the emergence of the central shopping district in Bangkok. So this is an area just outside the royal city, which was a garden enclave of royal palaces designed in European style, but in a very Bangkok watery landscape. And the little blue buildings in the center are a temple, Wat Patum Wanaram, and surrounded by water lotus gardens. This is the first shopping center in this area called the Siam Square, designed to help the American soldiers coming to Thailand in great numbers at this period. It's a park and shop model. You can park right in front of the shop house. It has one of the first bowling alleys and cinemas in Thailand. The first department store, the first interior atrium, comes in 1974. The first mega mall with an office building, hotel, multi-level parking deck, MBK, comes in 1984. So what you see is a very regular sequence of development, and that's because the property owned north of this road is primarily Crown property, and the property south of this main road, Ramawan Road, is owned by Chulalongkorn University. So this is leaseholder. They're giving long leases to the shopping mall developers. But what we're also seeing is a kind of Darwinian struggle of every new mall kind of replaces the earlier mall, because this has become an incredibly traffic congested place, and it's impossible to drive to one mall, never to two. So what happened after 1997, again in the interval of this this lull in construction, this end of this incredible financial crisis, is that the Bangkok Metropolitan Administration somehow managed to finish two lines of the first mass transit system, the SkyTrain system. And these two lines converge, for 1 kilometer along Ramelin Road between these two malls. And what happened over the next years is an incredible growth of an emergent connective architecture that wasn't planned, but certainly was designed by individual actors as they learned the benefit of not being in competition with each other, but creating a new urban armature of a multi-level walking system. So this is a SkyTrain, as you've seen the photographs above the street. When it hits, when the two lines join, it's multi-levels above the street, and then this red line is the connective architecture that evolved over this short period of time that is connects the thermal space. I mean, all the interiors of all these malls get connected to this multi-level walkway system, including all the escalators, everything we just saw. So in 98, I was not only documenting the ruins of the Hong Kong model not being able to translate to Bangkok, but the construction of this new multi-level system, which was quite spectacular. I would love to give a lecture on that. So here's our timeline, the time formations line of the shopping centers. This is the first intersection we're going to look at, which is called Pattimwan intersection. And we're just going to take a quick panorama around it, just so you can appreciate the complexity and multi-levels of the space. As you saw, the post-stressed concrete is quite a plastic structure as it crosses this intersection and the way the walkways go underneath it and connect inside the shopping malls. And this is a view under the SkyTrain. Now that's a street. The other intersection is called the Rajpathong intersection, and an even larger mall is the former World Trade Center, which was renamed Central World Plaza, which got completely wrapped in a new structure which responds to this multi-level system. That long armature is built by the developers of that because they were unlucky enough to have land that wasn't next to a SkyTrain station, so they built this armature. Again, I want to point out the sort of regular intervals of development before the mass transit and the acceleration of development after that. And this is where the ecological theory of resilience comes in, because what you see is a positive feedback system. These different landowners are acting on each other in response to each other, and so the production of this public space is accelerated. This is that second space. Take a quick panorama around that. Lawrence, I would love to do the escalator drawings for like this. Let's do it. And this is a view from over, you're standing over Rajpathong intersection. So these are the two intersections together in a 2 kilometer long super mega mall that is created through this interconnection. What I wanted to show in this one is that each mall has its website. So during this decade and this incredible intensification of feedback of these shopping malls is the creation of a kind of online community and relationship to each of these malls as well as the physical community there. So again, what's the technology that comes in during these intervals of urban dynamics and change? And here, this web system is quite interesting. We just flashed by the style by Toyota. They don't sell Toyotas there. Teenagers are asked to join as members and to play in the clubhouse of Toyota, so when they're 18, they'll ask mom and dad for a Toyota. And this is Siam Paragon, kind of culmination of This project is right outside of the central station, and you can see, instead of connecting through these bridges, the developers were quite brilliant. They pushed them all back and turned it inside out. So the department store, instead of being the blank building on the outside and you go into the interior atrium, all the vertical circulation elevators are thrown out the outside, but it's not connected directly. It creates a stairway and plaza. And this is the new civic space of Bangkok. You see the multi-level platforms for the SkyTrain as they're looking over this raised platform, where, especially at night, this is even hotter than Hong Kong, and vice versa, looking up to the train station. And this is from the platform back to the plaza. And in the background, that blackness is, the palace is still there. So these malls are on the Crown Princess's property. The other thing that came in addition to the internet is the cell phone. So mass distribution of cell phones. And so again, this is a network city now. You're Starbucks at the wrong mall, you call your friends, you go to the other mall through this walkway system, through the cell phone system. So these spaces are linked through the internet and also through the cell phone. So these are the technologies for creating a feedback architecture. And as you can see here, the Bangkok people, like in Hong Kong, love to demonstrate, if you follow the news. And the government of Thaksin Shinawatra, who is actually behind most of these the economic changes of creating a consumer and credit society in Thailand, was forced to resign when the demonstrators moved from Government House to in front of the shopping malls. They demonstrated for months in front of the Government House, no effect. 2 days after they assembled here, the government collapsed. What about Hong Kong? I couldn't resist a little homage of a lot of the spaces we've seen today. So we're traveling backwards on the air train, looking at the TV screen as we pass the logistical port, container port, and through this amazing infrastructure, soon to arrive at IFC. And this smooth space, this continuous space, which goes across acres and acres of landfill, is for me quite spectacular. Now we've arrived at the Hong Kong land properties, and I'm wondering, this is landfill, so I'm wondering about climate change and sea level rise, and I say, okay, this might work, this might be a resilient system here. We climb the peak. And what's great here in the mid-levels and the peak is that this isn't, again, like Akbar said, this isn't the mountain that's preserved as green. This is a different kind of green experience. And you see the potted plants, but you also see these incredible banyan trees which grow off the sides of buildings and which are heritage protected as well. We didn't hear about that today, but last time I was in Hong Kong, there was a great discussion about preserving those trees. And when we get to the top here, you'll see some of those, like this remarkable tree here, hanging off the side of the building. So this escalator up the mountain and these walkways over the landfill, some of the worst typhoons ever hit Hong Kong this year, and landsliding is, of course, a huge danger constantly during monsoon season. What are these public spaces like for ecosystem monitoring during a period of rapid climate change? Here's the landsliding landscape in the mid-levels. And then last but not least, my experience with a new town of Xuan Wan, a new town built for 800,000 people. Here's Riviera Gardens. It's an industrial site. And then here's the students of Chu Hai College. Because this new town has an empty public realm. The commercial space that is the base of these new towns are mostly empty, In this case, it became a great place to put a little school of architecture, and in incredible need of a kind of inside-out reverberation that I think we saw in the turnaround of Bangkok. So I'm kind of curious about these new towns, the aging population, the lack of children, the next 40 years in Hong Kong, and what happens to these places. Thank you.